We're doing the book of Shmuel. So our story begins with a man who comes from the mountainous regions of Ephraim. We should be used to that now. That's the third story in a row. And he is a descendant of Korach. Okay? His great-great-great-grandfather was Korach. And he is a very important person. He is the leader of the Jewish people. He is the prophet of the time. He has two wives. This man is called Elkanah. He has two wives. One is named Hannah and the other one is named Peninnah. Peninnah has 10 children. And Hannah has no children. And Elkanah would ascend to Shiloh to serve Hashem. And every time he would ascend to Shiloh, he would take a different route to remind people, hey, we have a mitzvah to go, come with me. He'd encourage people to come. And this was one of the great tasks of the leaders of Israel, to travel, to spread the word of Torah. And this is a unique trait of Elkanah, and it's going to be a unique trait of his son, Shmuel. And every time they'd come up there, so his wife Peninnah would tease and torment Hannah. She'd say, Hannah, did you see on the way there was a great sale on kids' sweaters? Oh, I'm sorry, I forgot, you don't have kids. Hannah, why don't you take another portion for your son? Oh, I'm sorry, I forgot, you don't have a son. So she'd say these cruel lines and torment Hannah. And Hannah would weep. She really knew how to get under her skin. And our sages tell us a very interesting line. They say that Peninnah meant for the sake of heaven. Peninnah was very pious, Hannah was very pious. And Peninnah felt that if Hannah were more focused on her prayer, she could break the heavens and get a baby. Peninnah was right. When Hannah actually breaks, when her, at one point, Peninnah torments her, and Hannah's heart breaks and she goes crying, and we will see that that's when she is gifted with a child. But so the Talmud has an interesting line. The Talmud says, in the book of Job, Satan torments Job, right? Job has the worst suffering a human being can have on the planet. And in the book of Shmuel, Peninnah torments Hannah. So the Talmud says, Peninnah and Satan both meant for the sake of heaven. Interesting to be in the same sentence with Satan, right? So there's a nice joke that they say, which has a core of truth to it. They say, how did the sages know that Peninnah meant for the sake of heaven? How did they know? Where is it given away in the text? So the line they say is that there are certain types of cruelty which you can only do for the sake of heaven. To be that cruel, to torment her, the other wife, you can only do that for the sake of heaven. So that's a powerful line. Sometimes when we're focused for the sake of heaven, we can get carried away to the point where a person can really do terrible things. So back to our story. So every year this goes on. And Elkanah tries to placate his wife Hannah. Hannah, why do you cry? Why won't you eat? Why are you so embittered? I love you. I love you more than Peninnah's 10 children. And Hannah says, what about davening? And Hannah sees that Elkanah has come to terms with the idea that he'll have his children from Peninnah, and he'll have Hannah as his beloved wife. So Hannah gets up from the table. They're sitting in Shiloh. They're sacrificing. They're eating the sacrifice, the meat from the sacrifice. Peninnah is eating. Peninnah makes a crack at Hannah. Hannah starts crying. Elkanah tries to give her a good portion. And Hannah isn't interested, and he begs her, don't get so upset, right? Isn't that what husbands always do? Don't get so upset. I love you more than Peninnah and her 10 kids. Right, I love you more than Peninnah and her 10 kids. And Hannah just walks away. So she walks, and it's on that day, Eli has been appointed the new high priest, the Kohen Gadol. Now, she walks into the temple, and she's praying. And her lips are moving. And she's so embittered, she starts talking to heaven with great fervor. And she says, Hashem, you created all these armies in heaven. You can't give me one kid? All the stars in the world, you can't give me one? She says, Ribon Shel Olam, either you'll see and accept my prayer, or else I'm going to go off with another man. And my husband will see me go and with another man, and he'll tell me, you know, you shouldn't do that. And he will warn me the way a man can warn his wife in the beginning of a sota procession, right? The Torah says if a man suspects his wife is doing improper things with another man, he could ask her, please don't be alone with that man. And if she does it again, then he takes her up to the temple and there's the sota procession. And if in fact she was intimate with that other man, then she has a horrible death, the Torah promises her. And if she in fact did not do anything intimate with that other man, so then she will become pregnant, the Torah promises her. So Hana says, I will arouse Elkanah's suspicions. I will go with another man. He will warn me. I'll do it again. He'll bring me up, and then he'll give me to drink from the sota waters. And then Hashem, you promised that if a woman really didn't do anything intimate with the other man, she'll become pregnant. So I'll force you to give me a baby. Either give me a baby the natural way, or I'll play my hand. We'll continue in a second. Reuven, yes, you had your hand up before. He would, Elkanah, when he was ascending to Shiloh, he would travel in a circular way. He wouldn't go the direct route. And every time he'd stop in a different town, and people would ask him, where are you going? And he'd say, I'm going up to Shiloh. And they'd say, why? And he'd say, there's a mitzvah to go up there and bring sacrifices and learn Torah. And they'd say, wow, such a great idea. We forgot. And they'd start crying. And they'd say, we should go too. And slowly but surely, a whole caravan would form from each town that would go up to Shiloh. And every year, every holiday, he'd go through a different town, through a different series of towns, a different route, and he'd get whole caravans to come up, and that's how he aroused the Jews to reconnect to Shiloh, to reconnect to the temple. So she says, Hashem, I want a kid. I don't want him too tall. I don't want him too short. I don't want him too white. I don't want him too black. I don't want him to be too exceptional. Everyone should look at him. I want a regular kid, a kid like everyone else. She says, Hashem, if you give me a child, I promise I will dedicate him to you. He will be a nazir. He'll never drink wine. He'll never be focused on the physical. He'll be focused on being your servant for his whole life. And she's standing there. Her lips are moving. And she's praying. And Eli walks in and he sees a woman in the temple moving her lips and making all kinds of motions and movements as she's moving her lips. Now, a bit of historical background. Once upon a time, they didn't have refrigerators. And when they didn't have refrigerators, so they didn't have much to drink because nothing could stay without refrigeration unless it fermented. So they had two options. You could drink water. I guess they had three options. You could drink vinegar. They would sometimes dilute vinegar. Or you could drink wine. Generally, the wines was the other drink. If you weren't drinking water, you were drinking wine. It was rare that you'd actually squeeze out a juice and make juice. You could, but they just didn't do it. How often do you have juice and do you have fruits and you could squeeze out juice? So people would often get drunk. It was a common thing that people in the afternoon with their lunch or their dinner, they'd drink water and wine and people would get drunk. It was a big problem. Drunkenness was a problem. So he's walking in and he's thinking she just had the sacrifices and she must have drank too much wine and she's tipsy. Here she is, moving her lips. Now, she's a famous woman. She isn't just anyone. Her husband is the chief rabbi of Israel. And this is the Kohen Gadol. This is his inauguration day. Today he's been appointed. And he walks over to her. And from here we learn that if someone sees something improper, they should say something. He was in the position where he should have said something. So I can just tell you as an aside, before I became rabbi of a shul, I'd always be quiet. I never said anything. Like I'd sit in my corner in shul. I never said a thing. Today, if a Baal Koreh makes a mistake and misses a word, I have to make sure he goes back on that word. It's very uncomfortable. You know, I'd much rather be the guy sitting in the back. Many times during shul, I'd much rather not be the one.
Many people too.
Right. But there's a responsibility. So Eli is in charge of the temple. Here she is. She's walked into the temple and she's drunk. So he has to say something. From Eli, we learn two things. Eli's about to make a mistake. He thinks she's drunk and she's not. So we learn that if someone suspects someone improperly, so then they have to bless them. If you suspected someone of something and it turns out you're wrong, you have to give them a blessing. So Eli will bless her after he realizes he's in error. But we also learn from Eli that sometimes you have to speak up. So for most of us, that's not relevant. Most of the time, we don't have to speak up. We have to learn not to say anything. But sometimes we do. Sometimes we have a responsibility to speak up, and that's what Eli's about to do. So he looks at his breastplate, and the letters that shine are Shin, Kaf, Resh, Hey. So he puts them together into which word?
Shikor.
Shikora. He thinks she's drunk. He looks at his breastplate and he walks over and he says, "Lady, to when do you think it's right to get drunk?" And she looks at him and says, "You don't have prophecy. I don't know. You don't understand." And she says, "You really don't understand. I'm an embittered woman. I haven't drank anything. I've been praying before Hashem. I've been pouring my heart out." Now, to tell the high priest you don't have prophecy is not such a nice thing to do. She says to him, the letters form the word Kisara, not Shikora. I am like Sarah in that I also don't have children. Kisara. I am like Sarah, the matriarch. Or if you will, you could say Kishera. I am a kosher woman. But you automatically thought I was Shikora. Lo Adoni, you're not a master of prophecy. Now she just spoke not nicely to the man who's supposed to represent all our prayers in 10 days. It's Rosh Hashanah. Okay, it's not Rosh Hashanah. It must have been Shavuos. So she says, look, I don't want you to think that that other wife of my husband, she's so nice. Don't put me down next to her. I've been in such pain. That's why I'm speaking this way. And Eli realizes he's made a mistake, so he blesses her. He says, Hashem should fulfill your request that you've asked of him. So she got a blessing from the Kohen Gadol. So she goes back, and now she's not upset. And when they come back home, Elkanah is again intimate with his wife, and she becomes pregnant. Now, here we again learn halacha of how a person should behave. A person is not supposed to be intimate when he's using someone else's covers and blankets. When a person's using someone else's sheets, then they might see some residue from when a person's intimate with his wife. And that's not modest. No one should know when a person's intimate with his wife and not. We never tell, because there's a mitzvah for a couple to be intimate on the night that a wife goes to mikvah. So it's considered immodest to tell other people when a woman's going to mikvah. We don't tell, because then they can figure out that they're going to be intimate tonight, and that's no one's business. So part of modesty is that people keep it private. So the same thing here. Elkanah waits till he comes home, and then it says he was intimate with his wife, and Hashem remembered her, and she became pregnant. And we say, we read this story on Rosh Hashanah, because on Rosh Hashanah is when Hannah, Sarah, and Rachel were redeemed. That's when they all became pregnant. So she has a child, and she names him Shemuel. And then Elkanah goes up to bring sacrifices, and Hannah says, no, I'm waiting till this baby finishes nursing, and then I'm going to keep my promise. I'm bringing him up, and I'm not taking him back. He's going to stay and serve Hashem. And so she stays and nurses the baby, and when the time comes that he's old enough, so he is a genius. The kid just finished nursing, and he already knows the Torah, and he already knows how to figure things out of the Torah, and there's a problem in the temple. The Kohanim that are up there are slow to work. Kohanim ordinarily are very quick. If you're the servant in Hashem's temple, you better be quick. And sometimes people are lazy. People aren't quick. And I'll tell you an interesting story. I was in a shul once where the Kohanim went to bless the congregation, right? So Kohanim all have to wash their hands before they bless the congregation. Who's supposed to wash their hands? The Levites. The Levites go back and wash their hands. So the Kohanim bless the congregation. And after davening, the rabbi gets up and says, look, the Kohanim came to me with a complaint. And the Kohanim told me that they all piled up in the back. They went to wash their hands. And no Levites showed up to wash their hands. So I want you to know, the rabbi said, that the halacha says that if there aren't Levites in the shul, then the firstborn should wash the hands of the Kohanim. So please, could all the firstborn show their hands? So all the firstborn raised their hands. And then the rabbi turned to the Kohanim and said, looky here. If the Levites are going to be lazy and not show up to wash your hands, you have a lot of people to choose from. So you choose whoever you want. You guys shouldn't wash your own hands. The custom is someone else should wash your hands. That was the first time I appreciated this story. Because every Levite said to himself, afterwards I heard the Levites go over to the rabbi and say, the same excuse. Every Levite said, I thought the other Levites were going. That's not the way you serve Hashem. If you're going to be a servant in the temple, you don't say, well, someone else is going to do it. You run up and say, maybe I'll have an opportunity to do the mitzvah. If you value what you're doing, you rush to do it. So the Kohanim are rushing to do their end. All the Levites are sitting there, and each one figures someone else is going to wash their hands, someone else. The Kohanim are piling up. On Shabbos, you don't have a lot of time to wash hands before they have to be back up there to Dochen. That was the first time I appreciated why it's so important in the temple to be swift to work. And the Kohanim, think about it, people show up with a sacrifice. You made a trek. In those days, it was a huge journey. You had to prepare for it for months. You finally come up to the temple. This man represents God to you. He's the servant in the temple. You've been waiting for this for months, if not years. You finally come up there, and there's a long line. It's the Misrad HaPnim. You come up there, you say, I want to make Aliyah. And they tell you, take a seat. We'll get to you in a day or two. Take your turn. No, what do you say? You get all annoyed. This is what I came to Israel for. You wait an hour, you wait 2 hours, you wait 3 hours. There's no air conditioning. There are flies. There are kids with full diapers. They're running and climbing all over you. Your animals are making noise. You have to take care of your animals. You have to take care of your kids. Come on, it's a balagan. You have to make sure your animal doesn't get blemished. You've been watching it the whole way. And you see the Kohanim sitting back, drinking wine, eating their meat. You'd get annoyed. What's going on here? I thought you're servants of Hashem. Why aren't you guys working? If you don't mind your own business, we'll never do your sacrifice. Come on, you'd come up there. You'd walk away feeling, this is terrible. This is the house of Hashem. So this is what was going on. The Kohanim were very into eating the meat and enjoying the free meals they were getting. And so when they come up to the temple, there's no coin available to slaughter the animal. So Elkanah's there, his wife, Hannah's there, Shmuel's there, and they ask, what are we waiting for? So they say, we're waiting for a coin to be available to slaughter your animal. So little Shmuel is 2 years old, and he speaks up and he says, the Torah says that from the time that you have to start taking the blood and sprinkling it, then the Torah says, take a coin. The Torah says, slaughter the animal, and a kohen will take the blood and sprinkle it on the altar. It doesn't say a kohen has to slaughter. So you see from the Torah that you only need a kohen from after slaughtering, not before slaughtering. We don't need a kohen. We could slaughter it ourselves. So everyone said, ooh, wow, the kid's onto something. So the two-year-old kid just showed up to the temple, and he points out something from the psukim. So they start asking around, is the kid right or wrong? So who's the chief rabbi of the temple? Eli. They come up to the old kohen gadol, Eli. And they ask him. So Eli looks at the kid and he says, you're right. But you're not allowed to give halachic ruling where there's a chief rabbi. You're not allowed to walk into a town and give ruling. Sometimes I'm a guest in a town and people ask me halachic shaylos. And I say, don't ask me. You have a rabbi here. You have to ask him. There's a rule, a maradasra. If there's a rabbi there, you're not supposed to give halachic ruling. That's why he's the rabbi there. So Eli says, you gave halachic ruling where I'm the rabbi. You're sort of going to get the death penalty. So Hannah throws herself at his feet and she says, this is the kid I davened for. Don't you remember 2 years ago I was the woman who was here? So Eli says, okay, I'll daven again. You should have another kid. So she says, no, I want this kid. This is the one I davened for. And she begs him to pray that he shouldn't die, that Shmuel should not be punished for what he just did. So even though Shmuel is very smart, he makes a critical error, excuse the pun, when he first comes up to the temple. But you'll notice that his error is also a reaction to the misbehavior of the young Kohanim, Eli's children, who are not so swift to do their task. And Hannah makes up with Eli that Shmuel will stay and learn by him. And even though his children did not come out the way he would have liked, but Shmuel is going to be his prime disciple who will be the one that will come out the way he wants. So Hannah goes out and says her prayer, her song about how Hashem helps everyone. And don't think that just because you're down, it's over. Hashem looks at every person in every state. And Hashem cares for every person. And even when a person's down to the dumps, Hashem pays attention to him and helps him get out of that state. Look at me, she says. The other wife used to mock me. And I've already had 7 children. And with every child that Hannah would give birth, Pnina would lose 2. 2 of her children would drop dead. Until she was up to her 5th child. And Pnina had lost 8 of her 10 children. And Penina came begging to Chana, and she said, please, pray that my children shouldn't die. I beg forgiveness. I should have never tormented you that way. And Chana prays on her behalf, and then the last two children do not pass away. So Chana, in her song, says, look at how the world works. Some people think, right now I'm on top of the world, so they think that shows something. No. Hashem changes things very quickly. Hashem brings people up and brings people down. He decides who will be wealthy, who will be poor. And I should teach people. People should look at me and see how there is hope, even when things seem completely desolate. So Elkanah goes back home and he leaves his son, the Levi, Shmuel, to learn by Eli, the prophet, and Kohen Gadol. And we're a little bit out of time. So we'll pick up here, Be'ezrat Hashem, with the story of Eli's children and Shmuel's first prophecy, Be'ezrat Hashem, next week.